And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Boy, it is coming down in buckets.
Yes, it is.
Here on Murfreesboro Pike by the airport. Whoa. Now it's starting to let up a little bit.
A little, but still.
This is the stuff, I guess, coming from Omaha?
Oh, I don't know.
The College World Series was getting?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to be, I don't know, maybe I haven't.
No, I think it's just off and on.
Yeah.
Scattered.
But how will it affect the baseball schedule tomorrow? That's always the question. And the fields today, you know, the fields are going to get wet. It's been a spring. Of course, this is officially summer now, but spring has had some weekends that were completely washed out from rain, as you know.
Yes.
Completely.
Early on, there was just.
Don't even go to the field.
One rain out after another.
I had one game where we played one inning.
Hence,
the whole weekend.
Why we're still playing. We play a game. Well, our last game is tomorrow at the end of June because we had so many. I think we had 4 or 5 rainouts. And when you're already playing 18 games in a regular season and then 3 more in a tournament, well, if you keep winning, yeah, makes for a long season.
Yeah. So if you play deep into the spring and the summer for baseball or soccer or lacrosse, you've had to deal with the elements a lot.
We got another great show in store for you. Of course, the NBA draft was last night. The Predators schedule, the entire NHL schedule came out yesterday. We will touch on that as well. The NHL draft begins tonight down in Big D. We got You Just Made the List, which probably my guess is Hal should put me on the list.
Oh, you're on the list. There's no question.
I'm just trying to figure out what he was doing. What was he doing?
We're going to have an instant replay. We're going to break down the tape. But I feel like you're going to be on Hal's list, and there will be some retribution. There will be. I'm not sure what form it will take.
He sent me a gif of a throat slash. I pulled out the oldest trick in the book.
Which you've done to many people before.
Yes. And I haven't done it in a long time, but I'm sitting here in studio. They were at Kitchen Notes. By the way, why are we never at Kitchen Notes? I mean, we like to be at Kitchen Notes at the Omni.
We're about due. We're about due.
Well, we are overdue.
We are.
We're not about due. We are due. Send us to the Omni. Send us to Kitchen Notes.
Give us some reason. Some convention, some seminar has got to be coming through there.
Just the breakfast buffet, anything. One menu item. You've put grapes on your menu. Let's be there. Let's talk about it.
They're
at Kitchen Notes. I'm just sitting in here, and I pulled out the oldest trick in the book. And Hal Gill, who we love, Skillsy, who's been filling in on the afternoon show with Jared the last couple of days.
Well, he's already been named Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
For his fine work, his first year as a radio analyst.
Season. Yeah. Yeah. And he fell for the oldest trick in the book.
He got rattled with the call waiting while he was doing an interview with the morning drive crew.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if he was maybe a little mentally drained from dealing with Jared the last couple of days in the afternoon
That's
show.
8 hours. 8 hours.
Yeah.
With Jared,
I mean, so maybe there was a little fatigue.
But he came unglued.
He lost the train of thought. He could not get the train back on the tracks. And then finally he had to just come clean and say, I've been called by Darren McFarland. And I mean, he was done. It was over.
So were you listening to this?
Yes, I was.
So I'm just sitting over here minding my own business. Chase McCabe is behind the glass. He has no idea what's going on. I'm just sitting over here on the other side, just minding my own business. What was going through your mind when this was happening? Like when you were listening to this, what were you thinking?
Well, when he said, I'm getting a call, I had my suspicions.
So before that, though, you didn't know what, like, you could tell,
well,
like, he was
I knew
very,
something was gonna, I
he
knew,
was rattled.
I knew something was happening. Either something was, sometimes we've had this happen to us before on both sides, whether we're giving an interview from our phone or conducting an interview from the studio with somebody on the phone. Something happens. Either, you know, maybe your dog says something, maybe your kid says something, maybe there's a traffic, you know, somebody cuts you off or somebody honks at you, but he was clearly distracted, and it just takes you away from the interview. You don't want to have that happen to you, but it does happen every now and then. But I have to say, it was, you know, so I thought something was going on, But then it was just a call coming in. I was like, okay, get it back. You know, you're talking about trading the first round pick,
yep.
You know, for assets now, and he just couldn't get it back together. He just couldn't get it back.
It was a really bad shift by Skillsy.
Okay.
Julian says we have.
We're going to break down the tape.
He's giving us the thumbs up.
Okay, the question by Nick is, hey, you know, the Predators don't have a first rounder or a second rounder. What's the trade-off here? You know, is this worth it? Because David Poile was the first to say at the trade deadline, it's not going to be a whole lot of fun the first night in Dallas because I've traded my first round pick and we don't have a second round pick. So here's Hal's answer. It starts off okay.
You're going to get rid of draft picks in order to have players that can play right now. And that's what they're looking for.
See, this is where where you made the mistake, right there. Looked.
I'm getting a call in. You still there?
Yes, we're here. Can you hear me now?
Sorry about that. you want to win, so you get the pieces you want, and you get rid of. You know who that is? That's Darren McFarlane calling me.
You tell him we're doing a radio show. Right. Tell him to go get a milkshake.
What is wrong with him? Like, doesn't he have like 20 minutes before it's his time?
Exactly. Like, seriously. Hey, Hal, go ahead and answer it. We got your drift. We got you. We appreciate the time. And tell Darren we appreciate him calling you.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything.
What was he doing?
Nick basically said, continue to answer it, but do it on your own time.
But see you
because
later.
We don't have time to get this back.
No, finish your answer. Yeah, see you later. We'll talk to you later.
Oh, that was great.
My goodness.
But just remember, Darren, kind of like you did to a producer of ours years ago when you sent him to a restaurant with a nice gift card.
Yes, a $50 gift card.
To a restaurant that had closed and was no longer in business.
I was paying up my bet.
What goes around does come around.
Da Vinci's Pizza. A $50 gift
card.
See,
this is what Darren does as a prankster. He does some things that I think, you know, go right up on the line of crossing the line.
Really?
Into just
was that out of bounds?
That was close.
Really?
I mean.
All he's got to do
Julian,
is just ignore me.
This guy, Julian, just beware because you're our producer now. Okay. He sent our producer, this was 5 or 6 years ago, to a very nice establishment. We had some great shows.
I lost a bet to him.
So he gives him a free dinner. Says, take the family. Take your son. You know, take the kid. You know, take some friends.
He
gives him a really nice coupon.
No, it was a gift, $50 gift card.
$50 gift card to a pizza parlor that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And he went to the place, and the place is boarded up, and we're out of business. So the guy was hot, man. He was not.
That phone call was not nice.
He wasn't like laughing, hey, you got me. He was hot. There was steam.
We can't even repeat.
Coming through the phone.
We cannot repeat that phone call. There may have been some beeps in there. May have been.
So I know Hal's wheels are turning right now.
It started with you, and then there's start filling in the beeps.
So Hal's wheels are turning right now. He's thinking, okay, it's coming. When you least expect it.
So how crazy is it that Barry Trotz gets named the New York Islanders' next head coach? And the Predators are going to see Barry Trotz and the Islanders twice in the first 9 days of their season. So not even a week and a half into their season, they're going to be done with the Islanders. And oh, by the way, the home opener, the debut of Barry Trotz on the bench as the Islanders' head coach will be at the Barclays Center, against whom? The Predators.
Oh, yeah.
That's their home.
Yeah.
That's the Predators' second game, but that is the Islanders'
opener
to the season.
That's how we found out. That's why we thought it was initially reported that it was the Predators' opening game, because it was the Islanders' home opener. But the Predators are playing the Rangers' home opener and then the Islanders' home opener before they have their own home opener.
But the Predators come back with a four-game homestand, and sandwiched in that four-game homestand are the Islanders again. So they'll see them twice in a week. They play each other on the 6th and the 13th. So twice in a week, and that's it. But what stood out to you about the schedule?
Number one, I thought that this, you know, first of all, the schedule is the schedule. You got to deal with this stuff, and there's things that we'll find out later in terms of who's good, who's not good, et cetera. But a couple of longer road trips this year. I thought last year there were less real lengthy road trips. There's a couple more long ones this year. Plus, the Predators will play on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Very, very
yes,
interesting. It's never happened before.
I could not believe that part. On the road, New Year's Eve. At home, New Year's Day. Is that right?
No, I think they're both on the road. Washington and Philly.
No.
Is that right?
I don't think
back
so.
Home?
No.
I think so we're like, back. We'll be on a plane New Year's Eve night?
Yeah, no, I think it's away and home.
Let me ask you this. Why does the NHL play games on New Year's Day other than the Winter Classic?
I didn't think they did. That's what surprised me. I thought that was supposed to be the standalone. Right? I mean, what? To your point, why would you do that? That's supposed to be your big event. So why would you have something else getting away in the way of your big event?
Yeah, it is. You come back home, a back-to-back?
So at home? They're at Washington and then back home against Philadelphia.
Wow, I just assumed Washington and Philadelphia right next door to each other. Back-to-back, you come back home?
Strange scheduling.
Wow, I didn't look at that very closely, did I?
So, yeah, they'll have a home game.
So we'll get back for New Year's. We'll get back for the dropping of the bell, maybe, or the dropping of the ball, perhaps.
Yeah, for you, yeah.
Gain an hour coming back, maybe.
Well, actually, look at the time of the New Year's Eve game.
But look at this. Then we go back out on the road after that. At Detroit, at Montreal, at Toronto, at Chicago, at Columbus. So you come back for one game. That's odd. So the new – oh, it's 11:30 a.m.
That's what I was saying. Am I looking at this right? Yeah. It's showing that it's a morning game.
Okay, so it's an early game on New Year's Eve day. That's odd. On a Monday?
Well, it's New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So you'll be back in plenty of time.
Okay. A lot of road games on either side of that.
For the shindig at the Donix. Do you guys still do that?
A miniature, scaled down version. Yeah.
Okay. Is this as we get older?
Yeah. We used to go pretty all in.
You couldn't move in the house. We come back. Corey Pronman from The Athletic. We'll talk about the draft. Starts tonight down in Dallas. We'll get into a bunch of stuff with Corey. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tonight, the NHL draft gets kicked off down in Big D. Predators do not have a pick currently right now in the first or second round. They will not pick until the third round. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you on this Friday morning. Let's bring in Corey Pronman from The Athletic. Covers the league for them. Corey, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good draft, bad draft, okay draft in your mind. What do you think?
I think it's an average draft. I think the first overall pick is an above-average first overall pick in Rasmus Dahlin. I think Andrei Svechnikov, the likely second overall pick, is a very solid second pick. I think the talent is good, but a lot of it is built up into smaller defensemen, wingers, very few centers, so there's risk there. But I think the talent level is fine, and I think Dahlin is going to be a very good player for Buffalo for a long time.
So don't expect Connor McDavid's and Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel's of the world in this draft. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think Dahlin isn't McDavid level, but when you're talking about like Matthews Eichel level, he's that level of a prospect. Like he's a high end defense prospect.
What is it, Corey? About and certainly the Predators are in this group. We deal with a lot of Swedish players, and they just continue to climb. I mean, when you look at the makeup of the rosters around the league, certainly North America dominates that with the States and Canada, but Sweden is right there in that next category. What is it about over there that they keep producing players at the highest level?
USA Hockey and Hockey Canada have looked into that as well and to try and see what their programs are doing. And, you know, what Sweden particularly has been doing has been a very heavy emphasis on skill from the very youngest of ages. You know, when the kids are playing very young, they're not playing full ice. They're playing half-ice games, working on their skills, working on their skating. USA Hockey, more specifically, has been the country that's tried to adopt the model from them in that regard to try and work on player skills. And we see it right now. I mean, you look, you know, even in the Predators, you know, thinner farm system. Ilya Tolvanen, a Finn, is their top prospect. Emil Pettersson, a Swede, was their AHL All-Star rep this season for Milwaukee. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, the best players, disproportionately relative to the country's population, tend to be from those couple of countries, Czech Republic, Finland, Sweden. They just do an incredible job of developing skill.
What about position-wise? What if you have a need, what is going to be the best position to fill that need in this draft?
For the Predators or in general?
Just in general, if you're anybody out there.
I think the defense talent is above average in this year's class. I think we can see defensemen go often and early in the top 10, top 15 of this year's class.
Corey Promen is with us with The Athletic, and he has broken down this draft class. The Predators do not currently have a pick in the first or the second round. So, Corey, let's ask this. How's the depth of the draft? When the Predators do make their picks, are there some people, or are we just kidding ourselves on some level, just saying, you know, when we're talking about 17, 18-year-old kids, there's going to be a little randomness. You're just hoping that you find the right guys who develop into really good players.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it at the end, I mean, especially towards the third round. When you get to the 80s and the 90s, trying to figure out the depth of the draft into the mid rounds is a little difficult, even for people who follow the draft closely. I think, you know, you're just hoping you make good investments on guys' talents and they pay off. You know, and the Predators have made some nice picks over the years in the mid rounds. But, you know, I like the depth of the class is more evident towards the very top in the mid rounds. You know, this is a team that's going for it. They had to trade picks, but I don't think I have a really good idea of the quality of the player they're going to be getting.
What do you find is the best way to attack it when you're looking at guys in the mid to late rounds? Is it high ceilings or is it big character? What do the teams that have the most success tend to do?
Yeah, just the former. Take guys who can play. Take good players. I mean, it sounds basic, but you'd be surprised how many teams don't follow that logic. And, you know, take the guys with the talent, with the speed, skill, hockey sense, and you hope, you know, they become something. You know, that's what Victor Arvidsson was. And you hope, you know, and other players along the way, well, Girard was briefly as well for the Predators. That's how I think you find value in the draft.
You know, you mentioned the Swedes and the Finns. The Predators have had a lot of success with Swedes and Finns and piggybacking on what we're just talking about in the mid to late rounds. You look at Pekka and Arvidsson and you know, some guys. Patrick Hornquist was the last pick in the draft 1 year, seventh round. But let me get your take on Russians in general, Corey, because, you know, especially with the KHL the last 5 or 6 years where there's an option to stay home, there's probably pressure on some young Russians to stay home. How has that affected how they've gotten picked in the draft?
Initially, when the KHL started and they started putting real financial pressures on, you saw teams get very, very scared to pick Russians high. It's why Vladimir Tarasenko fell to 16th overall in his draft year. But, you know, lately, I think that scare has lessened a little bit. We've seen the KHL doesn't have the financial power to hold more than two or three really good teams that can pay players. And really the trend is if the player's any good, they come eventually. You know, they may not cross the pond when you like them to. It may take a year or two longer than you like, but they all eventually come. And if they're good, they tend to stay. And, you know, I can only think of like one or two examples where that wasn't the case. And so I think you've seen the number of Russians being picked increase year over year over the last 5 years, because I think teams are realizing that the KHL factor is not as prevalent as it was maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
Interesting. I was going to follow up, too, with what do you think? Do you think the fact that Ovechkin and Kuznetsov breaking through and winning it, Radulov coming back from the KHL and having success, now it looks like Kovalchuk is going to come back. Do you think that maybe gives teams even more confidence to select young Russians?
Yeah, I think most of the teams I talk to, they are not as worried about that factor as they were a few years ago. They're gonna, if the Russian is the best player on the board, they will heavily consider taking him.
Any other surprise? Do you think we'll see some trades here early in the first round to kind of spice things up? That might be the only thing that Predator fans have to entertain themselves tonight when they watch the first round. But do you think we'll see any bombshells?
I think we will see trades. I can't tell you what they're going to be, though. That's not really my beat. And nor, you know, there's always like a million rumors going around this time of year, and 10% of them play out. Which what those 10% are, I can't really tell you.
Corey, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Yep, sure thing. Have a good day.
You too. Corey Pronman with The Athletic, NHL draft tonight. We'll find out, can the Predators move up? Do they want to move up? I mean, who knows? It kind of feels a little bit like the Titans draft, right, where they don't have very many draft picks, and we were wondering the same thing. Will the Titans acquire something? They didn't. I mean, they draft four guys, five guys? What was it, four, five? You know, four guys. I mean, so you do wonder, is this going to have the same feeling as the Titans draft just a month ago or so?
You never say that there's no chance, because David Poile can get creative. I think it's probably unlikely that they trade into the first or the second round, especially given the fact that they are, you know, they're trying to win right now. They, unless they want to shed a contract with something else up their sleeve, I think what I'm looking to hear about in the next day or two is, are they making any progress on Ryan Ellis? Are they
right
close to making a deal? Will they hire a coach from Milwaukee? I know those are two things besides the picks they're going to make eventually tomorrow, probably. The
cap's
going to
be
right
about
now.
$80 million. What?
Yeah, 79.5
to $80 million. What does that change anything?
I think that's more or less what they probably looked at, and it does give them a little bit more breathing room to make a deal and have, or at least have some flexibility with Ellis specifically. But the question is, do they want to get into other things that are out there? There's some guys with 1 year left on their contract that are going to be talked about a lot over the weekend, but probably throughout the summer and then on into the season. Max Pacioretty is getting mentioned a lot. It looks mm-hmm. like the Canadians want to be busy. They want to shake it up. Is there a team? I'm not saying it's the Predators, but you heard Pacioretty's name mentioned a lot. But I think at the end of the day, the Predators don't feel like this is a good position to be in. They don't feel like they have to do something. If something presents itself and you're like, that's a deal that's beneficial to us, they might look at it. But I think they're entering in, we like our team, no need to have to push to do anything. Different story for Montreal. So Max Pacioretty, we read stories about Wayne Simmons. That's a really intriguing player.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Panarin for Columbus, Ryan O'Reilly for the Sabres, some pretty big name guys that are getting bantered about.
We'll examine the draft a little bit more when we come back. Also, there's some teams being named. Kovalchuk's agent is supposed to talk to these teams. We'll tell you who those teams are down in Dallas on the other side. You're listening to Darren and Donick on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You heard Corey Pronman talk about, I asked him, what position you need to fill a need would be the best position to fill that need. It looks like all signs are pointing toward defensemen. This may be defenseman heavy, and you may, as they're saying, get some real number one defensemen out of it. Like the 2008 draft, if you remember, the 2008 draft produced Drew Doughty. He's pretty good, right? Petrangelo, he's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Erik Karlsson.
Very good.
And then late in the first round, I mean, he fell. I mean, he was late in the first round. John Carlson. That's not
what
a
draft.
Not a bad 2008
And how ironic
defenseman.
Is it? The Predators had two first-round picks in that draft and didn't pick a
Take
defenseman.
A defenseman.
That took Colin Wilson and Chet Pickard. Chet Pickard. Oh, boy.
Hey,
can't win them all.
There's going to be misses, man. You just don't want to miss like the Yankees, okay, where you're swinging and whiffing all the time. You want home runs, but you don't want to whiff as much, right? Just put the ball in play.
Yeah,
like Colin Wilson's putting the ball in play.
Yeah,
that's a nice single.
Done a lot worse.
It's a single up the middle. That's what it is.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting though when you see a draft like that. That was a pretty deep first round for sure. It's interesting that, I mean, what if? That's a crazy question. What if they had plucked one of those guys? Because they had a chance to get – Carlson was later in the first round. Doughty and Petrangelo were right at the top.
Right,
the Predators
at the top.
Didn't have a chance to get them.
But Carlson –
Carlson and – both Carlsons.
Yeah.
Were lower. Spelled
differently.
Yeah. No relation.
Both Carlsons. Can you imagine if they had one of them? Whew. Over Chet Pickard. I know that's tempting. Over Chet Pickard. Hello. The guy that's projected to go, Dallin, is from Sweden, and we're talking with Corey Promen about the players from Sweden. Certainly, we've gotten to know Swedish players here because they've been pretty prominent here for a while.
Oh, yeah,
and they're great to deal with, and they've turned out to be really good hockey players. But why is? Because I was looking at a breakdown the other day of obviously North America. You know, with the States and Canada, that's predominantly the rosters are made up of guys from that area, from that region, North America. But then after that, remember for a while it used to be Russia, but it's Sweden.
I would say Sweden is, and maybe even Finland.
No. I'm saying I've seen the numbers. Sweden is next.
Yeah, okay. I gotcha.
Outside of the states of North America, it's Sweden. Most players comprised on NHL rosters.
I would imagine some of these things can run in cycles, but...
Sure. But why now? Why is the cycle... Players from Sweden.
It's hard for me to answer. In talking to Philip Forsberg, I was asking him about soccer, because Sweden has got a
they love soccer.
A huge soccer following for sure. But it's really soccer and hockey. When you get down to it, there's tennis, there's individual sports, there's skiing, things like that. But I just think hockey is so popular there, and they've had so many great players go over to the NHL. And there's something about, as Corey was talking about, the training methods are really good. I feel like
I thought that was interesting. They don't use the full ice, use half ice, more skills, working on things rather
less
than
less games.
Less games, yeah.
I am a big believer in watching youth sports now that I feel like we play too many games too. I think the North American hockey, that's the reputation. That you're playing too many games, you're not practicing enough, whereas the European model is to train, work on your skills. I'm a big believer in that for sports like baseball and basketball. I think that translates well. Is sometimes I think we're like, we just throw them out there, we play, and that's fine. But I think there's a lot to be said for playing a lot less games and taking that time and just working on your game.
Well, with that being said, though, Willie, is to me, and I've wondered this for a good while, is there any sport that takes less time off than hockey? I mean, you think about it. If you want to play year-round as a hockey player, as a professional hockey player, you can. I mean, how many of these guys, the minute they're done, as we saw this year, they're right over in Europe in some tournament. What other sport do you get that? I mean, just think about it. What other sport?
Well, baseball, crazy enough, some of the Latin players, they go play winter ball, though.
Well, that's true.
And sometimes you have to beg some of those guys because that's how they've conditioned themselves to say, wait a minute, take some time off. Don't play winter ball, even though it's your home country and they love when you come down there and play and it's warm down there. Some people have really benefited from going to winter ball. So I can remember being a first-year pro at Medicine Hat and thinking to myself, man, I've been playing. This has been a long season. And then they have what's called the Instructional League in the fall. Right, you hear the Arizona Fall League, that's probably the featured thing, but some clubs just take players and they keep them for an extra 4 to 6 weeks to work on stuff. And I'm thinking to myself at that time, man, if they invite me, that means they think I'm good, but man, my body is telling me I need a break. I hope they don't tell me to go on there. I just want to go home. So that's the dilemma. But some of these guys, they don't get burned out. And they put in the time, they work, but that's a balance, right? You're conditioning but not getting mentally burned out.
Yeah. I mentioned Kovalchuk's, and we talked about it on the show this week. Kovalchuk, of course, coming back into the league at 35 years of age. He's been gone a while. and he's coming back to the NHL. His agent, Pierre LeBrun, put out there, is expected to meet with four teams today down in Dallas before the draft. The Bruins, Los Angeles Kings, that's for you, Hal. I'm sorry about this morning. San Jose, not really. And Vegas. It seems like right now when you just kind of read of the Bruins want him badly. Question is, how badly do they want him? Look, they could have him if they want him, if they're willing to overpay.
This is going to be – well, we talked about this the other day.
Yeah.
What would you offer a guy like Kovalchuk? But it looks like when you have a lot of suitors, which they do, not Ryan Suter, but a lot of
– My number is going to be way too low.
Yes. He's going to get some dough. But at 35, how do you structure it? How many years do you give a 35-year-old? Do you go higher on the dollars but less on the years, saying, hey, we'll go higher than some teams will. Other teams might say, we'll give you 4 years. We don't care what happens in the last year or two. Maybe we'll buy you out if we have to. But we're going to give you that guaranteed contract for longer. Whereas maybe another team says, we'll just 2 years, but we'll jack it up to $6, $7 million a year. I don't know what he's going to get. But remember, teams might have a little more breathing room now that they know what the salary cap is. And they've known this for a while. It's going to be in that neighborhood. But it's the first time the cap's gone up significantly in a while, right?
Well, thank you, Vegas.
I guess that's
part of it. I mean, the league is very, very healthy right now.
Yep.
Things are very good. And, oh, by the way, Seattle, it'll keep going up. Because Seattle's going to pad everybody's pockets again here real soon. And so the league is continuing to thrive, and revenue is good. It's good to own an NHL team right now. So that's why you're seeing this. And like I said, when Seattle, when it's official, when they come in and they pay $650, $750 million, the cap is going to go up again.
Probably so. And that is something that you can think about when you are budgeting down the road for Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, contracts like that, and saying to yourself, what about Kevin Fiala down the road? What about, I mean, you go way down the road, Eli Tolvanen. But you also have to think about with Seattle,
and you hope,
who are we protecting?
You hope UC Saros.
Absolutely.
One day he's in that category.
Well, you have a chance to address that now.
Well,
that's
saying, though, you hope by then, let's say 3 years from now, you hope that you're having to discuss a Pekka-type contract that he signed 6 years ago, right?
Sure. You want that to
be... You hope you're in a room talking to him for about a 6 or 7 year deal at a healthy amount of money. You hope.
Mm-hmm.
That means you have a number one goaltender. You have a true number one workhorse.
I like...
For 60 games a year.
I like the numbers for Saros, and I heard Jared and Hal talking about this pretty extensively yesterday on how do you attack Saros' contract, knowing that it's a wait and see. It's a one-year evaluation for Pecorino. You know he's the man coming in next year, but there's really no use addressing his contract until after the season. That's pretty much how they're going to attack that. But you have a chance to take a look at Saros this year. You have to sign him. So what's your approach? Are you going longer? Are you going bridge? Are you going 1 year? There's options there.
We'll come back in hour number two. Chris Lowe will join us, ESPN college football writer. The sad news in Knoxville, certainly Chris knew John Ward very well. He's got stories. We'll kick off the 11 o'clock hour with him. But we'll come back, touch on what happened last night in the NBA draft. We had Michael Wallace on yesterday from Grizzlies.com. What did they do at 4? Were they able to trade out? Were they able to get rid of a bad contract? We'll talk about that to wrap up the first hour next on 102.5 The Game. The picks kind of went as planned early on. If you looked at enough mocks, we certainly had some guests on, and it looked like all signs were pointing toward Ayton to Phoenix. Young man out of Arizona, the owner of the Suns, Wildcat alum, Arizona Wildcat alum. So that made sense. Ayton went number one. Didn't really make sense, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out as a seven-footer. Because the league is not really about seven-footers anymore. But Phoenix Suns. You realize the Suns have not been to the playoffs since 09, I believe?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Gosh, remember when the Suns were good every year?
The Steve Nash days.
Man, they were in the heart of
They were
all
fun
those playoffs.
To watch, too. So much fun to watch.
Before that, Barkley. I mean, they were always a team contending. They haven't been to the playoffs in almost a decade.
I would contend they're one of the more fun teams to watch that never really had the spotlight. They were close. They had chances. They could never get by the Spurs. You know,
well, when they had Barkley, they were in the spotlight.
Yeah, but that was early 90s. Yeah. I'm talking about the Steve Nash Spurs. That's the era I'm talking about. When
they didn't have the spotlight with Larry Nance?
I don't think so. They had some, I mean, the Suns have had good teams over the years. We're talking. You're going back 40 years. I'm talking about the most recent good Spurs team. They were right in the era where the NBA came out of the grabbing and clawing, and they were sort of down. They didn't have the superstars. They were in a little bit of a dead era. I don't know about dead, but it was a little bit down, right? The post-Michael Jordan, what's our identity? Then they did some things to open the game up, and Steve Nash was the perfect guy for that. And all of a sudden, the Spurs were fun to watch. I'm sorry, the Suns were really, really fun to watch. That was a great team, but they could never really take the spotlight. But I thought they did a lot for the game to make it fun to watch. That was one of the teams I was drawn to during that era.
That'd be
a fun list to put together. Really good teams that never even really got to the finals.
Never won at all.
Yeah, not just basketball. You could do that for a lot of sports.
Kings took Marvin Bagley out of Duke. So, yet again.
There's a team that hadn't been good in a while.
No. Well, and they had their time, too.
Yeah. You had to go back a little further, though. But it's now pretty far removed.
When their front office was playing for them, that's when they were good.
Exactly.
Then the Hawks took, hello, my name is Luka. But then they traded him to Dallas. So that was kind of like the first big. So it went as form where the Hawks took the young man from Real Madrid.
Luka Doncic. Yeah.
Yep. And they shipped him to Dallas. And they got Trae Young in return.
So the Hawks are believers in Trae Young. And Mark Cuban is a believer in Doncic.
Yeah.
I think they see a Dirk Nowitzki kind of.
Yeah, but he's.
You know, They believe. Now, he might be. Who knows? Only time will tell.
Dirk's a 7-footer. He's 6'7", 6'8".
I know, but I'm just talking about with a guy who has exclusively played over in Europe.
Overseas, yeah. Then the Grizzlies stayed put. They were unable to get rid of Chandler Parsons' contract. They were unable to get out of the fourth spot. And they took Jaren Jackson. And most of the mocks I looked at had them taking Jaren Jackson from Michigan State.
And, you know, when we talked to our guy yesterday, he didn't think Jaren Jackson would be there at 4. A lot of mock drafts had him at 3. So, we'll see. How much of an impact will he have right away? Can he spark them on a team that, when they have everybody, is pretty competitive, unlike a lot of the teams that pick at the top of a draft?
Just once again, isn't it crazy? I mean, Jaren Jackson, 6'11". You've got Ayton, 7-footer, Bagley, 6'11". Mo Bamba went right after that, 6th overall. He's what? Mo Bamba's 7-footer.
Oh, yeah.
So, was that 4 of the first 6 picks were 6'11", 7 feet? Which, once again, that's interesting because that's not where the league is today.
Yeah, but these aren't your back-to-the-basket type of big man. Like, the only one that is that would be Mo Bamba, just because he's not offensively developed yet. He's a great rim protector. But Bagley is a guy who can step out, knock down a 3, he can put it on the floor. DeAndre Ayton, same case. I mean, all these guys now are super athletic. Jaren Jackson, they can all handle the basketball, can all shoot from the perimeter. So they're matchup and mismatch problems. So it's completely different than we're looking at, like a Dwight Howard, who is basically a dinosaur in today's NBA.
he's been a dinosaur for a while. By the way, has he now played for every team in the NBA with the trade?
He doesn't have a team right now since he got bought out.
So he got traded to the Nets and they bought him out?
Yeah, he wasn't going to play for the Nets. He's ring chasing now. He's going to see what contender wants to ruin their chances of contending by bringing in him as their cancer of the locker room.
Good luck. Good luck with that.
But, you know, that is really something to think about, though, is the traditional back-to-the-back, back-to-the-basket center. You just don't You don't see
Wendell Carter went seventh. He's 6'10", 6'11".
He's also one of those guys who can shoot from outside, yes, and who can handle the basketball.
Yeah.
These kids nowadays are far more talented, offensively skilled at every position than they ever have been before.
He was one of those guys when I watched him at Duke, and he would start firing it up from the outside. I'm like, why are they letting this guy shoot? They got three or four other guys who are better shooters, and get this guy into the basket. But he would make his
share. He's a better shooter than Bagley.
He's a pretty good shooter. Yeah.
Colin Sexton went to the Cavs. Interesting pick for the Cleveland Cavaliers. They take the point guard out of Alabama, so Colin Sexton goes to the Cavs. The Knicks took Kevin Knox from Kentucky. The 76ers took Bridges from Villanova. That was pretty much a shoe-in, right? That
yeah, kind of made but sense. Then he got traded. Yeah. His mom worked for the Sixers, was overjoyed to have her son back
They
home.
Interviewed her. They went nuts.
He got traded to Phoenix for Zaire Smith from Texas Tech.
Oh, boy.
That is just – how does she feel today?
It's going to be – it's real awkward in the office.
No
good
kidding.
Grief. Didn't he do an interview saying how excited he was?
Yeah.
To
oh,
play
yeah.
Football?
Yeah. They were interviewing both of them.
Oh.
And they were linked to go with Mikal Bridges this entire time. And then they get rid of him. It's amazing. It's a great, what an awesome 20-minute homegrown story. Philly kid goes to Nova, wins two national championships. Mom works for the organization, coming home, play there, and he's gone.
Mm. The Denver Nuggets, this is where things got really interesting. The Denver Nuggets at 14 took Michael Porter Jr. And it is a mixed bag, and it's interesting because when you hear all the reports out, it's very clear this was all about – there were teams that said, we are not drafting him. We don't trust his back medically. We're not giving him a passing grade. We're not taking him. So there were a lot of teams that just simply said, even in the late first round, that said, we're not going to waste a pick on him. We don't trust him. And, man, if – and this is probably a big if – if his back holds up and he doesn't have to deal with this, what a steal at 14. That'll be 2 years in a row. What was it, the Mitchell kid for Utah went 13th last year?
I don't want to talk about that.
Porter went 14th?
Mike, it's one of those things, too, because Denver, they were on the last day of the season, they lost on the road to the Timberwolves, so they were almost a playoff team.
In overtime.
So they already have a young nucleus that can go out there and win games. So, yeah, if he's healthy – they're going to be pretty good for the next couple of years. And I know some teams, like the Hornets, I was sitting there and I was wondering, would they take Michael Porter Jr.? I knew they wouldn't because they don't have the stones to make plays like that. So they actually didn't even have him. They had Miles Bridges, who they end up trading for after they picked Shai Gilgeous-Alexander higher on their draft board than Michael Porter Jr. How that's possible, I don't know, because I know Michael Porter Jr. played two games this season, but you could tell watching him he's got more talent than Miles Bridges.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because everybody gambled and said, we're just not going to do it, except for Denver. So it took all the way to 14. And who knows if the Nuggets don't take him, how far he ends up falling just because of because of his back. Without that issue, he could have very easily been the number one pick overall.
Yeah, it's funny because Darren Rovell's tweeting out Michael Porter Jr. cost himself like $26 million. Like, no, he didn't cost himself $26 million. The NBA cost him $26 million with their rules because last year, this time, he didn't have the back issue. He would have been a top five pick had he been allowed to go straight out of high school.
Well, he couldn't, but yes, true. But this year, what also hurt him is he couldn't even do a private workout. He could not do workouts at the time, which also scared people. Like, he couldn't even do workouts. So they're like, whoa, how bad is this? So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. When we come back to second hour, Chris Lowe from ESPN, he'll have some great John Ward stories. We'll do that to kick off the 11 o'clock hour of Darren and Donick. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.